Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, good morning to you and welcome to another edition of Leading Edge Medicine on this glorious October morning. Yes, fall is here. And we have Dr. Samira Umat in the studio as well as Dr. Jerry Mixon. We are ready to take your calls and talk to you about your health and your aging and a recent diagnosis, whatever those questions are. If you didn't get through last week, call now. Get into that call queue and be ready to go. I'm going to go ahead and give you the number. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. And good morning, doctors.
Good morning,
hey,
Lynette.
Hey, good morning, Lynette. Yes. And I noticed, Lynette, that you didn't talk about any fun things. You didn't mention Halloween. You didn't mention football.
I didn't. Okay, fun things. Going to a Halloween party tonight.
Ooh, and yes. You're dressing up?
Well, I'm dressing up in what my kids, for my 60th birthday, did. They had everyone come in costume because it's so much fun. I love doing that. And they even bought a costume that fit me like a glove. So I will be Cinderella.
Ooh.
And my husband is Prince Charming. So we are going to our cousin's annual Halloween party. She will be doing this in Canada tonight near Vancouver.
Nice.
And so a little bit of a road trip and having fun doing that. And then, of course, had to do grandkids pictures with all the pumpkins and the pumpkin patch. So I love this time of year. I love the food. I love the sweaters, the cozy boots, and all that goes with it.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I have
I'm
my
just
big
enjoying
sweater on
everything.
Today too.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
My sweater's in my office down the hall.
Yes, and even last night was walking through Seattle Center, and they're starting to get all the Christmas lights up and the twinkling
it's
lights.
Not even
and it
Halloween.
Was perfect. I know. I know.
Halloween, then Thanksgiving,
then Christmas.
I know.
That's
but,
right.
Oh, I forgot. That's run by politicians.
That's right,
the
yes.
A bunch of idiots. I have no idea what they're doing.
I was thankful for all the lights in the Seattle Center, though. It was very, very holiday, and the weather was perfect. For our walk back to our hotel. It was just very wonderful. So, yeah. So there you go.
All right.
Was that fun enough?
Yeah, that was fun.
Okay, that was fun enough. And what are you thinking about, doctors? What is top of mind for you today?
Stress,
huh? Stress. Oh, boy,
well,
especially.
We started the last show with.
We did. Yeah. I thought it was a great start.
And anxiety.
Yes.
That's right.
Anxiety. It's that time of the year.
What's going to happen?
Yeah,
and oh, boy.
I'm going down. On Halloween, I'm flying down to Dallas. I've got a meeting, a regenerative medicine meeting down there, and I will be talking with several physicians that I'm kind of plotting a peer
plotting
and
oh. you
plotting what? A study
on yes. Halloween. Are you going to wear a costume on the plane?
Probably not.
Okay, no. I knew.
I may though come to work dressed as. My character.
Well, you know, I wasn't sure what our policy is, but I wanted to ask Jenny early next week, what are we doing on Thanksgiving? I know that we're having a potluck in the office.
Yeah. Oh, that's
so,
fun.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're the medical director and she's the manager. So what happens in the clinic is what you want to happen.
Ooh, I see.
Ooh, okay.
I will be downstairs at headquarters in the morning and in the afternoon I'll be heading for the airport. So
well, if you're wearing your costume. Don't waste it down here because there's hardly anybody here. Come up to the office and show us.
There you go.
And let's take some pictures.
Yes. Yes.
I may do that as long as I can get home in time to change into my traveling clothes.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm going down to talk to some guys. We're doing a study on Relief Factor, one of the supplement company's products. And this is a doctor who treats chronic pain patients, severe pain, that are all on narcotics.
Yeah.
And so the question is, if we put them on a good dose of Relief Factor, can we lower their dose of narcotics and get them on a lower dose of narcotic and still keep them comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
We're not hopeful at all that it will replace the narcotic. It's not that strong. But if it allows us to cut the dose of narcotic by 25 or 30%, that should move us into a safer range for those drugs in which we should have a lot less risk of overdose deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And since overdose deaths are a significant problem in this country among people taking narcotics for chronic pain, that would be a very, very good outcome. So we don't know whether it's going to work or not. That's why it's an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
But I have now talked to the people that make our products. We're going to have them make us up placebos, so they'll be in the same packaging, the same everything. They'll look exactly like Relief Factor, but half the people will be on the real stuff and half will not. And then at 6 months, we'll swap them.
Nice.
And those that were on the placebo will get the real thing, and those that were on the real thing will go to the placebo. And the hope, of course, is that those that start on the real thing, when they go to the placebo, will absolutely come unglued and be really unhappy because now they're hurting worse.
Sure.
And we'll say, okay, that's our answer. We don't have to make them suffer for 6 months. We just need to find out what happens when they go from the real thing back to the placebo.
Right.
So should be an interesting study.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you're taking the time to go and look into this and invest into it, because as you've always said, objective measurement is the key, and that's what we do at the clinics. If we don't have objective measurement, we don't know whether we're successful or not.
That's right.
There's always a placebo impact, and we have to make sure that we provide evidence-based medicine, and that's why we do so many measurements in our clinics at all times.
Yeah. Well, I've always been distraught, if you will, by those people who put out ads for their products to say, and I feel 15 years younger. And the next guy for a different product say, well, I feel 20 years younger. And I can't measure how they feel.
Yeah.
And placebo effect makes people feel all sorts of things or not feel other stuff. So what we want to do is get objective measurements. I can measure how fast and how far you can walk or jog or run. I can measure how strong you are.
Yeah.
There's things that we can measure I can measure your percentage of body fat and the muscle mass you've got.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We measure inflammation. We measure hormone levels. We measure a whole lot of stuff. And that's what we make our decisions on.
Right.
Not I feel this or that.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's an important difference in longevity medical clinic.
Yep.
Is we're looking for objective, measurable results that your body and your brain are literally functioning better than they did when you came to us.
That's right. And I think that's one of the main reasons why our patients stay with us as long as they do, because after they've completed their first year, if they decide to stay after that, the vast majority don't leave.
Nope. That's right.
And it's because they recognize that they're not getting that same amount of measurement. Now, we have the capacity to measure, but under your insurance system with your healthcare provider, they have to justify why they are measuring something.
Yes.
Whereas when you're under our system, outside of the insurance system, we measure because we're treating and we're looking and we're trying to prevent. So we measure things like insulin level, which hardly anybody measures.
True.
Because that is a risk factor for prediabetes, metabolic dysfunction, metabolic syndrome.
Degenerative joint disease, cognitive decline, all sorts of things go up along with insulin levels.
Yeah. And so if we know that, and we know that if it's left unchecked, that if not today, but time down the road, this will become a problem for you, then people will say at the time, well, why didn't you tell me earlier? Mm. Like, you know, I just met a patient recently, and then the scores were high, and it was a fact of, like, well, what could I have done? And, well, 20 years ago, if you had been a patient, we could have started you on the path where this normal profile would be checked, and we would be watching for it, and you would be taking measures early so that today you would not say, well, what do I do now, right? Yeah. And right now we're just putting a Band-Aid on it. We're still more active and proactive than others, but it's still like 20 years worth of damage now that we're trying to fix.
And it's always easier to not let the damage happen than it is to, once the damage occurs, to try to fix it.
That's right.
You know, and people sometimes seem to lose track of the fact that what will prevent a disease is not going to cure the disease. Mm-hmm. Those are two very different issues. Mm-hmm. And the example I like to use is, everybody knows that you're supposed to keep your tires on your car inflated. Mm-hmm. Because if you have low amounts of air in those tires, the sidewalls flex and the tires wear out faster. Mm-hmm. Yes, they still go round and round. You still go from hither to yon, but your tires are wearing out much faster. Mm. Once they wear out, putting the air in the tire doesn't help.
Right.
Okay, the damage has already been done. Mm-hmm. Now you got to replace the tire. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the human body, those low hormone levels, that high inflammatory index, those peptides that we don't want you to have, are doing damage. Mm-hmm. After 50, 60 years of life, you come to us, we discover them, and you say, well, if I fix these, will all my problems go away? And the answer is no.
Yep.
The damage has been done. Mm-hmm. If you don't fix it, the damage will continue to be done, and you'll get in even worse trouble.
Right.
But what we want to do is stop the damage.
Yeah.
We want to repair as much as we possibly can, and then prevent it from going south again.
That's right.
And that's what we do at Longevity, and we're going to talk more about that in the show, and we're going to take your calls. Susan, we'll be right with you when we come back from the break, and you can get your question into the call queue. Don't wait until the end of the show. Give us a call right now at 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and we'll be right back. And then Mark wants to talk about the pancreas. So we've got three callers queued up and ready to dive in. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, here with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon, and your phone calls. To get into the call queue this morning, here's the number, 206-421-5757. And first on our list is Susan, calling in from Tacoma. Welcome, Susan.
Hello, Susan.
Hi. Hi there. I'm 59. I've recently been diagnosed with osteoporosis, and they said I'm young for that, which I agree. The doctor wants to put me on alendronate. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Alendronate,
you know what it is.
Yes.
Alendronate. And they also prescribed calcium carbonate, but my husband and I have been researching, and we listened to your program. I was a patient there for a little, but right now I just want to know alendronate. I'm thinking drugs probably aren't good. No, I'm sure you know about this. What is your suggestion?
Well, it's not my favorite.
Well, yeah, but okay. It is one of the oldest in the...
It is. Been around forever.
Yeah, oldest class of drugs for treatment of osteoporosis and osteopenia. So how bad is your osteoporosis? What is the number, do you remember?
-3.
Oh, okay. And is that in the spine or the hip?
I think he said, you know, he didn't specify. It was down at Madigan. I think he said it was in the hip, because that's mainly where they took pictures of when I when I did that scan thing.
Okay.
So,
well, so let's talk about osteopenia and osteoporosis. Obviously, it is a common problem. It happens as we get older. And what it is basically demineralization of bone and loss of bone. So when you're younger, weight-bearing activities and also hormones, estrogen and testosterone particularly, tend to lay down bone, make it stronger, and prevent the resorption of bone. But as we get older, the cell turnover changes. There's not enough testosterone or estrogen to help lay down more bone. Testosterone particularly lays down bone. Estrogen prevents resorption of bone. And when you reach, you know, perimenopause and then into menopause and postmenopausal age groups with the declination of these hormones, then the rate of bone resorption increases, which basically means the bones become thinner and weaker. And the reading is that, you know, after you get to minus 2.5, then they classify you instead of osteopenia into osteoporosis. And so at osteoporosis, the bone is really weak and fragile, and the risk for a break in that bone with minimal trauma is high. So if you were to fall, you would probably fracture that bone. So then the question is, what do you do to help maintain the strength of the bone and prevent a further problem, which is a fracture? Because if you sustain a hip fracture, statistics are that 1 in 2 will require some help after that fracture.
For the rest of their life,
yes. And so we have our thoughts on that. Obviously, we're at longevity and believe in prevention. And so the most natural thing you can do for that is hormone replacement therapy. Both testosterone and estrogen will prevent the bone from resorbing and will help heal it. Now that it's gone this far, though, it's a little bit harder. That's why you're actually a shoo-in for our earlier dialogue about prevention. Had you, you know, continued with the hormone replacement therapy, then maybe this would have slowed down, delayed it, or even prevented its progression, because you would still be laying down healthy bone. But now, at -3, the question is, what is your
she's
preference?
In trouble.
Now, yeah, it's a toss-up.
Yeah, the problem is that the testosterone stimulates new bone growth, and the osteoblast, the cells that make new bone, are stimulated by testosterone. Testosterone also is a stem cell protector.
Yes,
it allows you to keep the stem cells that let you grow new tissue, all new tissue, bone marrow, bone, muscle, all of it. The estrogens that you had in your youth were protecting you against bone loss. And so as you've aged, your testosterone loss means you're making bone slower. Your loss of estrogen means you're dissolving bone faster. And that combination of making it slower and dissolving it faster results in negative bone density. Things go down and down. You know, we can kick things back into gear to make bone again, but that's a slow process.
Yeah.
That would mean we would have to reverse your process, and it would take a few years to get you there. With the alginate, we can actually make a harder bone within about 6 months. Now, it won't be...
Wait, what did you say this about?
With the Fosamax, the alendronate, the bisphosphonate. That's the first class of drugs that came out.
Bisphosphonates are the general class of drugs that these...
Yeah, that alendronate is. It's basically Fosamax.
And so this doesn't make normal bone. It makes harder bone.
Stronger bone, yeah.
The outer cortex of the bone gets stronger and more rigid. It doesn't have the flexibility of natural bone. And if it breaks, it doesn't heal as quickly or smoothly. So it's less likely to break because it's harder. You get an abnormal but stronger structure to the outside layers of the bone. The inner layers, that matrix, it's a trabecular matrix on the inside of the bone, continues to fade away. These drugs do not make healthy, normal bone.
Mm-hmm.
But the bone is stronger. And so if you fall, you're less likely to break it. If you do break it, on the other hand, it doesn't tend to heal as well.
Right.
So it's, you know, like everything in medicine, it's a plus and a minus.
And the drug has side effects.
And the drug, it does indeed have some side effects. So we prefer to involve people before you get all the way down to a three.
Right.
So we have more time so that we can actually grow healthy new bone and not have to make these decisions.
Right. You know, there are newer class of drugs that are IV therapies, but now you're kind of stuck in the insurance quagmire where you have to show, or actually your doctors have to show that you tried one and didn't tolerate it before they could give you some of the more expensive medications. But I guess if the question is, would you consider treatment or would you wait for HRT? And that's really a very difficult question and very personal one. So you have to weigh your own risk versus benefit. Well, definitely you can do both. Yes.
You know, you can use the bisphosphonates on the short term to give yourself the faster protection.
Yeah.
While then using the longer term solution with the testosterone and the estradiol.
Yeah.
To give you longer term healthier bone.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have 80-year-old women in my practice that have osteopenia, and we have slowly maintained their osteopenia and, you know, gotten them from minus 2.0 to minus 1.8, minus 1.5. We haven't gotten them back to baseline, but again, they are also getting older.
Yeah.
And so the hormones do help, and they will do the job. But if you're already at minus 3.0 at least one site, if not multiple sites, then your risk for a fracture is high.
So I have one more thing. I just, I wanted to update my contract, you know, re-update my contract, but because I also just had a knee replacement about 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm down to part-time at work. So right now that's not really an option for me to join again, but can you suggest something like if I go to like a pharmacy like Marlene's or something like that, something I could pick up like a natural estrogen or testosterone? I've heard of, I know there's DHEA, if I'm saying that right.
Well, DHEA is dehydroepiandrosterone, which is not a testosterone. It's a pro-hormone. And in young people, it is what your body makes testosterone out of.
Yeah.
But you don't have those youthful adrenals and ovaries right now. So the DHEA will stay as DHEA. It won't turn into the testosterone or the estradiol.
But, you know, given your age, you can talk to your medical provider and see if they would consider hormone replacement therapy for you.
Mm-hmm.
There are estrogen patches that can be used that are exactly the same as a physiological estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not opposed to that at all, but you'll have to have that conversation with your medical provider. They are okay with estrogens. I have never seen anybody replace testosterone.
No.
But at least it's something and it's better than nothing.
Exactly. Now, my knee is healing very slowly. My knee replacement. I had it done back in July. My doctor thinks that maybe one of the reasons, some people heal really fast from knee replacements and some people don't. Could that be a reason because of my osteoporosis why my knee is?
Yeah, sure. You're not growing new bone. You're not healing bone very fast. In fact, you're losing bone every year.
Got it. Okay, so what are some of the major side effects of alendronate?
Well, the biggest ones are GI side effects. It causes severe heartburn, so they basically tell you not to lie down after taking it. You have to stand upright or sit upright for a while. And then the osteonecrosis of the jaw. That one is a big one. The dentist will always ask you, what drugs are you taking before they manipulate anything in your mouth?
Yeah. If you had to have a root canal or something, you could trigger basically having part of your jaw die.
Fracture,
Wow.
And the rules are you stay upright, you don't take it with anything except plain water.
Yeah.
Make sure you drink enough water to get it all the way through the esophagus down into the stomach, because if it doesn't go all the way down, it can cause ulceration and irritation in the esophagus. So it's an irritating drug. It does have its downsides, but the good news is within 6 months or so, you will at least have a harder bone that will not break as easy.
Okay, Susan, is that helpful for you? All right, we're going to take a quick break and back with more phone calls. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and here's the number to get through today. It's 206-421-5757. Glenn, we're talking with you next. Stay close. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. We're here with you, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, and your phone calls. We are headed now to Tenino. We have Glenn on the line. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Hello, Glenn.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I have two rather quick related questions. Women have their period every 28 days. Is that related to the moon?
Well, first of all, that's an average length a cycle. It can be 10 days shorter or 10 days longer, and that it would still be considered normal.
But that is the average, and who knows why that developed eons and eons ago.
Yeah, good question.
That's a funny question.
Well, my follow-up question would be, is if it is related to the moon, as Rush Limbaugh used to claim, what we need to do is put all the women in one division. And after a time, they claim that all the women's menstrual cycles start happening at the same time. He used to call it the Amazon Brigade, if I remember it right.
Well, that's what Rush called it, yeah.
There you go.
But that sort of, we call it entrainment. And yes, when several women live together in close quarters, there is a tendency for them to cycle in unison. They all start cycling at the same time. And, you know, there are a lot of theories as to why that occurs, but it's an observation that's been made for quite some time. It kind of turned me off on the concept of polygamy, however, long, long ago. You know, when I lived in Salt Lake City, I went to medical school there, and they have a place in downtown called the Lion House, which is where Brigham Young used to live. And Brigham Young had 27 wives. Okay. In addition to menstruation, however, there is the premenstrual period. There is that time a week or so before menstruation where women tend to get, well, we call it PMSing. They get real mood swings. And sometimes those mood swings can be kind of difficult to live with for we mere males.
There you go.
And so I took a tour as a young medical student of the Lion House. And I looked, I walked down the hall, and I saw all of these bedrooms for his 27 wives. And being a young medical student, it occurred to me that, wait a second, 1 week out of every four, the average woman is PMSing. If you've got 27 wives, that means that six or seven of them are PMSing on any given day of the week. Do you really want to live with seven PMSing women at the same time? You know, there's the one thing of being a youth where you're obsessed with sexuality, and quite another to look at the practicalities of living with 27 women, seven of whom are in their menstruation or PMSing at any given time. No, thank you.
Any smart man not to mess with that.
Yes. No.
And be forewarned.
I would tell you that my opinion is Brigham Young had way more ambition than brain.
And as a woman, I would say I have the privilege of deciding whenever I want to be in that mood. Just deal with it, okay?
That's right.
I love it.
Oh, dear, yes.
All right.
That's the perspective of age. You see, I look back on my youth and I say, Things that look pretty hot at 18 don't look so good.
That's right.
A little later
that's
in
right.
life.
Actually, I've noticed, Jerry, you're very reflective. And so experience is good.
Experience is good, yes.
And you're gentle and milder, where sometimes I want to like shout and scream. You're like, okay, calm down, girl.
Well. I think what I usually tell you is chill, chick.
Chill. That's right.
Oh, boy. Oh, Glenn, does that help you? Are you asking for the women in your household, perhaps?
Or are you planning to add another 6 or 8 wives to your harem? I have no idea.
I have been female-less for quite a long time, and that just is the way it is. But I was just curious if the moon really had some effect on women's hormones and their...
I don't know, but we have always attributed to a lot of stuff to the moon. In fact, lunacy, to be crazy.
Oh,
was,
lunar!
Yes, it actually comes from the observation that behavior frequently changed with phases of the moon. And so to be a lunatic, was that your mind was warped by the moon. So there's a lot of things that we traditionally in medicine kind of evolved, and it has infected our language. But most of us no longer believe that lunacy comes from the moon. We think instead we get it from politicians.
So. There you go.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for the call, sir. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you so much. All right. We have a few minutes before our break. Let's take another call. At least get our question for the doctors. Staying in the Seattle area, Mark is on the line. And welcome, Mark.
Hello, Mark.
Yes. Good morning. Yes, I'm a patient at the clinic, but I'm calling for a good friend of mine who... had breast cancer about 5 years ago and is on a drug to try and suppress any future outbreaks. And so she recently had a colonoscopy. They found a polyp, just one polyp. On analysis, the polyp was cancerous. Also, she had a scan of her body because she still has one breast. And the scan recently revealed that she has a couple of dark areas, one around the right side of a rib. And the more worrying one was the one over the pancreas. This scan was done by a nurse practitioner because in the area she lives in, it's kind of a medical desert, is one way it's been described. The nurse practitioner said, well, yes, you have these suspicious areas, and one of them over the pancreas. We want to do this scan again in February. The reason I'm calling is that my amateur information about pancreas cancer is that you need to catch it early or else it's going to kill you. And so I guess the nearest place that she could go, she's down not maybe 50 miles outside of Tacoma, but I'm just wondering, because of that business of catching any pancreas cancer early, I assume that she really should go to somebody in addition to the nurse practitioner who she's gone to for a number of years.
I would.
Yeah.
Yes.
We need to go to break and come back, Jerry.
Yes,
we have to take a quick break, but we'll come back and chat about this when we get back, okay?
Yes, you stay right there, Mark.
Don't go ahead.
Okay, stay right there, Mark.
Topic, yeah.
And Jason, we're going to talk with you as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We will take a quick break and we'll be back with more. And here's the phone number to get into the call queue, just like Glenn did. And Mark and Jason, that number is 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. Medicine. We're talking about the pancreas with Mark from Seattle with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samiri Umat.
I'd be more concerned about metastatic breast or colon cancer.
Exactly, right now.
And there are some tests that can be done that are simple blood tests, really, that would give you some hints. Chorioembryonic antigen cancer antigen 2729. Are both good markers for metastatic breast cancer. And then there are some other ones whose names escape me that can be used for metastatic colon cancer. Because we know that she's now had two cancers.
Yep.
And there's an old adage that says cancer formers form cancers. Mm. If you've had one cancer, you're at much higher risk of a second cancer. And by golly, if you've had two, we better count on three.
Mm.
So... You know, she needs to go somewhere where somebody is very familiar with chasing this down.
Right.
The odds on it being a pancreatic cancer, if the scan was over the pancreas as opposed to in the pancreas, would be different. But, you know, still you want to take a look. Mm. And so I'd run the antigen studies. I'd probably do a total bone scan on her, looking for metastatic disease. Mm-hmm. So she needs to go see a good oncologist and get worked up.
Yeah,
that's really what it comes down to.
I think maybe even a good facility, like a big hospital system.
Yes.
Someplace
where she's
got
first-rate MRIs and CT scans and people that are used to using them a lot.
Because, you know, she might need more than one specialist in her team. Mm-hmm. So it could be an oncologist, a radiologist, and maybe even a GI specialist at this time. So multiple specialties may be needed. So a hospital system that can give her all of that would be my suggestion. And then I completely agree with you, Jerry, a bone scan or some kind of a scan right now to look for metastatic disease.
Yes.
It's interesting that she's on an estrogen blocker, and at 5 years out, we're having these issues, and then the colon cancer also. Remember, there was that study that said that estrogen prevents colon cancer, and here they're blocking her estrogen.
Yeah.
So,
you know, the Women's Health Initiative study, when they went back and looked at that study 10, 12 years mm-hmm. later, what they found was that women that were on estrogen, not on a synthetic progestogen, but just on estrogen alone, had 40% less heart disease and 40% less colon cancer than women that were not on estrogens.
Right.
So, you know, it was kind of a surprise to see that estrogen is a protective component against colon cancer.
Yeah.
But because of her breast cancer, they're blocking her estrogen, and now she shows up with a colon cancer.
Mm.
It's not good news, but you know, we are where we are, and we need to deal with it.
Right.
Yes, and she also has something, I guess it's a family passed down, something she called a MTV genetic variant.
Oh, mm-hmm. MTHFR maybe?
Maybe, although I don't know that's related to cancers.
Yeah, it's not.
That's ability to... methylate your B vitamins.
But it's a common genetic variant.
Yes, it is.
Yes, well, the genetic variant she has apparently also makes her more susceptible to cancer as well. Hmm. But
right.
Okay. Well,
it's a bit outside of our normal field of... Go ahead.
Yes. Well, The closest place, I believe, there's a Fred Hutchinson down in the Tacoma area, someplace around there, which would be the closest to where she lives. So my intention is to try and persuade her to try for there. And as I understood what you said, that there apparently are other checks besides the bone scan. These were non-invasive.
They're blood tests. They're blood tests. They're basically just looking for antibodies that are circulating in her bloodstream.
Okay. All right. Well, yes, because she's having been through surgery before with a single breast, that I will try and urge you to do that, because I think, is my assumption correct that if you do have some problem with your pancreas or pancreas cancer, you just have to do something real early or else.
Yes. Yeah, pancreatic cancer is a nasty actor. We usually don't find it until it has already spread.
Too late, yeah.
So, you know, if she has a pancreatic cancer that is early, she has a much better chance of survival.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the message here is that you need to be proactive now and not wait till February.
Yes, well, that's what I'm... And what would be the name of the type of doctor...
An oncologist. That's a cancer
oncologist.
Doctor.
Sure.
Right.
Okay. Well, very good. And I appreciate the information.
All big hospital systems have an oncology department.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. I'll convey this to her, and hopefully she'll go in this next couple of weeks. Yeah.
As fast
okay.
as she
well,
can
thank
get
you. Yeah. Thank you all for your help.
Yeah, you're thanks welcome, for the sir. Call Take and care. Good luck to your friend.
Yes, absolutely. Continuing with the phone calls, and if you'd like to get your phone call in, we invite you to call 206-421-5757 to talk with our doctors. Right now, headed to Mount Vernon, and Jason is on the line. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Happy Saturday.
Yes.
My fingernails grow fast. My ear hair grows fast. My beard grows relatively fast. My nose hair grows relatively fast. My hair on my head leaves relatively fast.
Yes.
What in the hell is going on?
You're getting old.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Did you say I was getting old?
It means you're getting old. We all have that happen to us, unfortunately. And,
right. Well, here's kind of an interesting years old, thing. Yeah, I guess I am chronologically old. But
how
would
old
never
are you?
I'm 70.
Okay. Oh, okay.
He's
I'll
a
be
kid.
71 in December.
All right.
Okay. But and see, then are you on testosterone?
Oh, I probably should have been on testosterone with you guys a long time ago.
All right. Well, and testosterone.
Still not too late. That's right. Never too late.
Testosterone, thyroid. Yeah, we put you on a whole lot of stuff. Let me kind of give you an interesting twist on that little pattern that we see, though, with older men. You know, we grow hair on our backs, our shoulders, our chests, our bellies.
Ears and nose.
Ears and nose. And the nose itself is still growing a bit as we get old, too, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, I forgot. My forearms, the hair on my forearms has got longer, too.
Yes, it does. We become orangutans everywhere except the tops of our heads. Here's a kind of a fun thing. There are places that will harvest the hair on your chest and your belly and your back and transplant it to your head.
Mm-hmm. No, well, and I was going to get to that, and along with one other thing, Advanced Hair Seattle, or whatever they're called, they've been advertising on the radio for, I don't know, over a decade with the same radio DJ, and he had had it. Of course, he probably gets it done for free, but, you know, the Advanced FEU process, But as of late, I've been seeing these advertisements on YouTube. It's called iRestore, and it's a helmet. It looks like it has a whole bunch of either LED or lasers or whatever.
Oh. Yeah.
12 minutes a day, and wear it, use it 12 minutes a day for a year. Guaranteed, if you give it a try and you don't like it, they'll give you your full money back. They're also offering a $500 discount, so I don't even know what the thing costs.
We know what you're talking about. We'll talk about that when we're going to take a quick break here. Jason, you stay on the line, and we will be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Let me go ahead and give you the phone number if you'd like to get into the call queue, just like Jason did. 206-421-5757. Our number two continues right after this break. Stay right there.